That's 2 hours. And so I figured a good place to start would be to just review what we did yesterday. Leptons. Leptons with three generations. Because some of the story is going to be pretty similar to what we'll see when we add quarks. Which we'll do today, and some of the structure is almost verbatim identical. And some of it's, well, not so identical. We'll add quarks and write down the full standard model Lagrangian. So we're finally going to be in a position to do that with all the particles. And we can also add some QCD too. So we'll get to see some quarks and some gluons. But the proper discussion of QCD is going to be postponed until next week, so most of it next week. So that's when Stefania is going to talk about it in more depth. So yesterday we saw that for leptons, we added a right-handed singlet, which is a left-handed spinner, and it had charges. So it's a singlet under SU2. And I'll just remind us that GSM is SU2 cross U1 hypercharge. So this is a singlet under SU2, and it's got hypercharge plus 1. If you're a singlet under SU2, your hypercharge is the same as your electric charge. And we added a lepton doublet, which was a neutrino for a specific kind of lepton. So I'll put a little L to remind us that there are three generations. And little l sub l, where I should really start using this notation. So now that's everything. And this object transformed as a 2 minus 1/2 under G standard model. And we found that there were Feynman rules. That we got by writing Dirac spinners for Dirac. And so for each lepton, we can write a Dirac spinner that's little l with the left-handed part and l right conjugate dagger. This is now the usual Dirac spinner. And we found that there were interactions with the photon, so psi lepton interacted with the photon. And we also found that there was a neutrino spinner for each flavor of neutrino. And in Dirac language, this is just nu L, comma 0. There's no right-handed part of this. So there are interactions with the photon that don't change any of the flavors. So every L stays the same here. Similarly, there were interactions with the Z. So psi L. But the Z also has interactions with the neutrinos, sub L, and it's the same flavor. And we found also that there were interactions with the W, where you have to put the neutrino next to the corresponding lepton. And this is the whole story for the electroweak gauge bosons interacting with matter content. We wrote down the Feynman rules, and I won't do it again. But just a few fun facts. So note, since the neutrino only interacts with the Z, well, and also with the W in, so this is referred to as charged current. Because the spin one particle carries a charge. And this conventionally is called neutral current. And this terminology is not specific to interactions with leptons. It's used in the context of quark interactions, which we'll get to today. But the neutrino only interacts, so it only couples to W and Z, which is why it's weak, which is why trillions of them are produced in the sun every second, and we interact with maybe two or three of them in a giant kiloton-sized neutrino detector buried somewhere underground. We also looked at the Higgs interactions. And we expanded about the minimum. We found that there was a Yukawa interaction, so with leptons in the Higgs. We defined YL to be a Yukawa coupling matrix and wrote down the doublet that coupled each flavor of this SU2 doublet with the Higgs dagger and L right conjugate plus the Hermitian conjugate of that operator. This is Lorentz invariant, and it's invariant under the quantum numbers of the standard model. We expanded about the minimum. And this gave us mass terms, Dirac mass terms, for the leptons. LL, LCR plus the Hermitian conjugate. And we identified this to be the masses of the leptons. And there was nothing subtle about this, because we could diagonalize this object. So we can diagonalize the Yukawa matrix for leptons, and there's no penalty. The diagonalization matrices don't show up anywhere else, so no trace. I shouldn't use the word trace loosely, so no appearance. In other interactions. Another interact. Okay. The rationale for being in this situation is that we can perform diagonalizations on the left-handed and the right-handed parts of this, of the Dirac spinners that live inside of these, well, that are built out of these objects. And the interactions here. So when we perform diagonalizations to put that mass term in diagonal form, they're going to be unitary matrices that show up in these diagrams. But the conjugation operator, so there's always going to be a psi bar in the Lagrangian term that interacts with, say, the photon. So it's always going to be some object times a daggered or barred version of that object. And so that'll give back the identity matrix, and so we don't have to worry about these anymore. The only place we might worry about it is in interactions with the W, because there's one kind of fermion here and a totally different kind of fermion here. So there's a lepton, a charged lepton, and a neutrino. And we might worry that the diagonalization matrix that shows up here after we perform it in the interaction with the Higgs might not be compensated by an interaction, a corresponding matrix that we can apply to the neutrino part. But of course, we know we can, because there's nothing else preventing us from performing any kind of rotation or change of basis in the neutrino sector, because the neutrinos only interact here and here. So I can choose an arbitrary transformation to compensate for any transformation that I put on a charged lepton field. That arbitrary transformation enters in the coupling to the Z and nowhere else. And here, it'll just undo itself. And so that's the whole story. And so we don't have to worry about any flavor-changing leptonic interactions in the standard model. So I just want us to keep that in mind because now we're going to talk about quarks. Quarks, but first with no QCD. There's no QCD, so we'll still only stick to G standard model. Okay, and we'll generalize this later. And so we're going to introduce just the first generation. But the other ones are going to generalize pretty straightforwardly. So the first generation is going to be defined in a similar way to an analogy with the leptons. So I'm going to define an object UCR, which is going to transform as a 1 and minus 2/3 under the standard model. Quarks have fractional charge, and that fractional charge appears in the definition of hypercharge, which is now funny, because the leptons, when we define their standard model charges, we gave them 1s and 1/2s. 1/2s were always compensated for by our definition of the charge operator, which had a T3 and it had a hypercharge operator. That added 1/2s, or it subtracted 1/2s, so that when we wrote everything in Dirac language, after electroweak symmetry breaking, we ended up with charges that were always plus or minus 1. In this case, that's not going to be true, because there's a fractional charge here. Similarly, we're going to write down DCR. So this is going to have the quantum numbers 1 and plus 1/3 under SU2 and U1. And we're going to also define a new doublet, under SU2. And I'm going to call it capital Q. So I just want to warn you about potential abuse of notation in the rest of this lecture. So Q, we've been thinking of as a charge operator. But in the literature, it's also conventional to talk about the quark doublets as being Qs, capital Qs. So I'll put a hat on the operator when we encounter it in covariant derivatives. But just like having a neutrino upstairs and a charged lepton downstairs, we're going to have an up-type quark and a down-type quark. And these are all still two-component spinners. So. Two-component spinners, and they're all left-handed under the Lorentz group. And as before, these are all just parts of the name. So the L is part of the name, the C and the R are part of the names of these fields. We could have called them something else, but this is a way to remind us of what their quantum numbers are. So let's just write down the electroweak interactions of quarks. Of quarks, so with the W and Z. And the photons also there, but we know how to couple things to photons. So let's start with the right-handed, or the ones with the R subscripts. Start with UCR and DCR. So for UCR, we can write down a kinetic term. That's going to look like, in two-component language, there's a dagger. There's sigma mu, d mu UCR, and the covariant derivative as before has the form d mu minus I g root 2 w plus mu t plus w minus mu t minus minus I g over cosine theta of the weak mixing angle z mu T3 minus, and here's where the ambiguity might arise. So consistent with the notation in the tutorial, I just want to put a hat on the thing that's the charge operator and not a quark doublet. And there's a QED interaction, which has the same charge operator times A mu. So this is the covariant derivative. And it's the same covariant derivative that will act on all the fields that we'll have. So this is, in some sense, a rote exercise, but it's good to just see it worked out. So for UCR, this is going to amount to UCR dagger sigma mu del mu UCR. So this is the usual kinetic term. This is not going to give us anything, so this is going to be 0 on UCR and DCR, because they don't carry any SU2 charge. They're not doublets. But they do carry normal kind of charge, because Q is just Q hat is T3 operator plus Y, and they do carry hypercharge. So their interaction with the Z is going to be non-trivial. G over cosine theta, I'm just multiplying in the I. Z mu, the T3 part of it is also 0, because that only cares if you live inside of a doublet, which this object doesn't. And the charge is going to be the same as the hypercharge for this case. And so this is going to be minus 2/3, but there's a minus in front of the Q. The minus I was killed by the plus I, and so this is going to give us plus 2/3 sine squared of the weak mixing angle. And I'm just going to say plus QED in the coupling to the photon. So we know what its charge is. It's going to be the same as the hypercharge, and this operator is going to act on it. So it's not super illuminating to write that down. For DCR, it's the same kind of story. It's exactly the same, in fact. The only difference is that, the only difference is really just going to be the coefficient of this operator. So we're going to have I DCR dagger sigma mu del mu DCR for the kinetic piece, and then plus G over cosine theta weak mixing angle DCR dagger sigma mu Z mu DCR, and it's going to be minus 1/3 S squared theta weak. Mm-hmm. Okay. For the doublet, Q, so in SU2 space, this is U left, D left. So now this object is going to act non-trivially on it. Main difference is going to be that it's kinetic term is now going to have I Q dagger sigma mu D mu Q. And I should just put this on the other board, but just write it out in generic detail here. So I Q sigma mu del mu Q. And I'm suppressing spinner indices, but there are, of course, a dotted index on this and an undotted index on that. So there's G over square root of 2 Q dagger W plus mu T plus, there's a sigma bar with a mu. That's not actually very clear. I should just write it in a nicer way. G square root 2 Q dagger I did it again. Sigma mu, W mu plus T plus W mu minus T minus, and G over cos theta, Q dagger, sigma bar mu, Z mu, T3 minus Q hat. This is the charge operator acting on Q. Plus QED. And the QED part, again, is just going to come from this. So it's not very important for now. Just recall that T plus minus is 1 half sigma 1 plus I sigma 2 plus minus. So this sign convention is the same on the left and on the right-handed sides, but it's the opposite for the definition of the W itself. So W plus minus is 1 over root 2 X1 mu minus plus I X2 mu. Where these were the gauge bosons of the original SU2. So W so the W and the quark interactions. So we're just going to concentrate on this piece here. So the Lagrangian contains G square root of 2. The quark doublet, when we write it out, is going to look like U left, D left, dagger. There's a sigma bar mu, and W mu plus times 0, 0, 1, 0, W minus 0, 1, question?
I figured it out.
Ah, okay. All right, good. So the W plus should actually look like this, so it has to be a raising operator because it acts on the second component to bring it upstairs, and then this has to be the T minus, so it's going to take the upper component and put it downstairs, and this is going to act on U left, D left, okay. And we can rewrite this now as G square root of 2 U dagger left, sigma mu. So I'm just going to multiply this into these objects, because this doesn't care about SU2 indices. D dagger left, sigma bar mu. So there's a W plus interaction. And the nice thing about the raising and lowering operators, the T3, the T plus and the T minus, is that you can just blindly multiply through. I don't have to worry about which charge has what. I just multiply this matrix into that two-component object in SU2 space, and it tells me that this has to pick out D left. So there's a D left. And similarly, there's going to be a W minus mu that's now going to put the UL downstairs. And this is going to give us our charge current interaction times U bar left sigma mu W mu plus D left plus D left dagger sigma mu W minus mu U left. Okay, so this is the charge current. Charged current interaction. For quarks. Questions? Did I screw up a DL?
You didn't raise it.
I didn't raise it. Here? The second line. What did I didn't? Ah, good. Okay, good. Thank you. Good, it should have been raised. But this looks okay. So you can always do this blindly because the W has to conserve charge. And so D left has charge of minus 1/3. U left has charge of plus 1/3, but of a plus 2/3, but I'm putting a dagger on it. So combined, these have charge minus 1, and then the W compensates for it, and similarly over here. So the structure has charge conservation built into it. And so like with leptons, the W changes flavor. So there's going to be, I'm just going to comment on it. I'll write down the Feynman diagrams for this business once we write down the four component spinners. I just want to put the interactions on the board. I want to do what we did last time, couple everything to the Higgs, expand around the minimum, define a Dirac spinner, and then write down the Feynman rules in four-component language so that we never have to worry about actually calculating scattering amplitudes in two-component form, where it's more annoying, the identities are less intuitive, and so on. So just remember for right now that the W changes flavor, and we'll see that in the Feynman diagrams. But you can see it right here. Every time I write down something that's going to involve an up-type, there's going to have to be a down-type, and there's going to be a W. But I'll put quotation marks around this because we'll make a more precise statement about what the kinds of interactions with the W are going to be like. So let's just bracket this. ZQ interactions. So with the doublet. So with the doublet Q, not to be confused with the charge operator Q hat. So the Lagrangian for ZQ is going to contain, U left dagger, D left dagger. So can everyone see if I keep writing along this line? Does the podium get in the way? No? No? Okay, good. So U left, there's going to be a sigma mu T3 minus Q hat. So now this is the charge operator times sine squared theta W and U left D left. Okay. So this is just, and I forgot the coefficient. So this is G over cosine theta W. Okay, and the I's canceled out when we multiplied through the kinetic term. So this is just coming from this kind of covariant derivative, but now it's acting on the quark doublet. And so the W term survived. We saw what that did on the left panel of the right board. And now we're looking at the part that interacts with the Z. So this is going to give us G over cos theta, U dagger left sigma bar mu, D left dagger sigma bar mu. There's Z mu, and now T3 acting on the upper component is going to give plus 1/2. Minus Q acting on U left is going to give minus 2/3. No, so it's going to give plus 2/3 sine squared theta W. Just want to sanity check the signs. So the T3 will always give a plus when acting on an upper component. Q by itself gives a plus 2/3, but the minus should flip it because the charge of an up quark is plus 2/3 if there's no C on it. So really this should have been a minus. Times U left. And for the bottom component, the T3 gives minus 1/2. And now the charges are flipped. But the down quark has charge minus 1/3, so minus Q is plus 2/3. Sine squared theta weak, D left. Okay. Now we can write down G over cosine theta weak. U left interaction. So this is going to be plus 1/2 minus 2/3 sine squared theta W. U dagger left, sigma bar mu, U left. And I'm pretty sure that's not going to be visible, so I'm going to try to squeeze it in here. But it's really just a multiplication of this row with this row with this column. And it doesn't change flavor or anything interesting. D left, Z mu, D left. Okay, so that's the charged current interaction for quarks and W's. This is the neutral current interaction. That covers all the electroweak interactions of the quarks, at least for the first generation. So until we add more things, this is the whole story. Okay. So the last part of this is just to couple everything to the Higgs so that we can find the right basis to do our calculations in later on down the road. So now let's just add Higgs couplings. So recall that the Higgs doublet the Higgs doublet has charge 2 comma plus 1/2 under the standard model gauge group. Q has 2 plus 1/6 under the standard model gauge group, which I actually didn't write down last time. Did I write that down? No, surprisingly, I didn't. Well, okay. So Q has, it's this NSU2 doublet, and 1/6 is the hypercharge of everything that lives inside of a quark doublet. So I apologize, that might have been confusing, but the nice thing about writing all the interactions with the Q operator instead of hypercharge, because you recall when we changed bases from the gauge bosons that were appropriate just to SU2 and U1 hypercharge, we expanded about the Higgs minimum and wrote down interactions that were really in the basis of the W and the Z. We had the liberty of taking the Q operator and defining it to be T3 plus Y, and we know that quarks have a charge of that up-type quarks have a charge of just electromagnetic charge of plus 2/3, and down-type quarks have an electromagnetic charge of minus 1/3. And this will be true of their Dirac spinners, it's true of all their electromagnetic interactions, and that comes about from this definition of the hypercharge for Q. But it's done in exactly the same sort of way. And writing the Lagrangian in the way where we're acting with Q operators instead of hypercharge operators means that we actually got away with doing this without having to know what the hypercharge assignment for the quark doublet was. But it is 1/6, and that's totally consistent with what happened here on this right-hand side of the board. So unless there's a C acting on this, the left-handed the parts of the doublet that have L in them, so everything that lives inside the doublet has the usual charge assignments. It's just that the hypercharge is defined in order to make that happen once you expand about the Higgs minimum. So let's start by coupling H with down quarks. So what kinds of interactions can we write down with H and the down kinds of quarks? So the quark doublet has 2 comma 1/6 under the standard model gauge group. I'll write D DCR, it's on the upper board, is a 1 minus, it's plus 1/3. So its hypercharge is just 1/3 y of DCR. And it's a singlet under SU2. So we found last time that when we did the same thing with leptons, we had H dagger times the lepton doublet times ECR. And it turns out that that structure where you put a dagger on the H to contract all the SU2 indices, that's going to be true in the case of down quarks as well. So this is going to be similar. So down quarks, downs are similar. And we can get away with writing down something that I'll just call YD. So this is the down Yukawa. Down quark Yukawa, I can write down H dagger, which now transforms as the opposite of a doublet under SU2, so an anti-doublet, I guess, and DCR. So let's just stare at this for a moment. So H is 2 comma, well, H dagger is 2 comma minus 1/2, because the dagger flips the hypercharge assignment. Q is 2 plus 1/6, and DCR is 1 comma plus 1/3. Okay. And if I add 1/6 and 1/3, I get minus 1/2. So the hypercharges all add up. So Y H dagger plus Y Q plus Y DCR are all equal to 0. So this is a nice invariant operator to write down. And the dagger on a doublet and a no dagger on another doublet is an SU2 invariant combination. So this is invariant under G standard model. Okay. So this was just like what we did with the leptons. And now we have to expand that around the minimum. So expand H, which is 1/√2 0V plus little h. So this is the Higgs boson. This is its vacuum expectation value. The dagger doesn't care about what's happening down here because these are both real fields, real and neutral, under all the gauge symmetries that are left over once you've expanded around the minimum. This contraction is going to give us yd over √2. So I'm putting a dagger on this. That makes it into a transpose. There's u left, down left, and ucr. And this is going to give us y down times the vev of the Higgs times √2. And as you might have predicted, it's going to contract the down. Oh, crap. I really should have written DCR, because that's what we're actually considering. So we're going to have d left times DCR. And we're contracting their spinner indices. These are always there whenever two fermions are multiplied together. And there's going to be a Hermitian conjugate with the daggers on the fermionic indices. We can define this as the down quark mass. And experimentally, I think this is about 4.8 MeV. So it's pretty light. It's only a factor of a few times the electron mass. And that's all we need to say about the down quark mass for now. So questions? No? OK. What about the up quark? What's invariant? So what's invariant? We can't write down this sort of operator anymore because DCR and UCR have different quantum numbers under hypercharge. So if I write down H dagger times Q, and then I multiply it by UCR, that's not going to give me anything that's invariant under the standard model. So H dagger Q UCR doesn't work. Not invariant under U1 hypercharge, because the hypercharge of UCR is minus 2/3. And it would only work if it had the same hypercharge as DCR, which it doesn't. Okay. So what? How else can we contract the doublet? Doublets of SU2. So H dagger times Q doesn't work. But we can write down the following object. So consider epsilon ij acting on hi times qj, where these are the doublet indices. Doublet SU2 indices. So I haven't conjugated anything. There's no dagger acting on any of these objects. So this is a doublet, and this is a doublet. And I'm contracting it with an epsilon. So now let U, let's just say U be an element of SU2. And now I'm going to perform a gauge transformation. Transform Q and H in the following way. So Q is going to go into U times Q, and H is going to go into U times H. If we write out the spinner, if we write down the gauge indices for SU2, for this object, I can say this is, so I'm saying that this is a J index, so I want to keep J L times Q L. And I can write this as the same U times I M times H M, just writing out the indices of the matrix multiplication. And these are the doublet's indices. So now this whole object, so H times Q goes into epsilon IJ HI QJ goes into epsilon IJ times U I M U J L times H M Q L. And this is actually identical to epsilon M L. Okay, so this is related to the determinant. So if I, this is part of the definition of the determinant, and the determinant of any SU2 matrix is invariant. It's just the same constant number. And so I can treat the epsilon as a raising and lowering index for SU2 charged objects like doublets, so that I can think of the object here as really having the opposite SU2 charge as the object that lives here, which means this is always going to be an invariant combination. And so let's consider if this works. So if we have epsilon ij hi qj, and I multiply by ucr, so these are now just the SU2 indices. So this is now, now it's hypercharge of plus 1/2 because I haven't put a dagger on it. This has a hypercharge of a plus 1/6, and this has hypercharge of a UCR, which is minus 2/3. And it works out. So a half plus a 1/6 is plus 2/3. So this works. So this works. We can expand around the minimum. So now what we're going to have is epsilon ij hi qj ucr. When I put the epsilon, that just has the effect of taking whatever was living inside of H and flipping the parts that live in the row. So here, when we had a dagger, that doesn't change the location of the V. It just takes this and makes it a row spinner instead of a column spinner. Or not a spinner, but an SU2 doublet. Here, it'll actually have the effect of putting the V upstairs. So this is just the Levi-Civita tensor. And it's anti-symmetric. And so it'll put the V upstairs. So epsilon puts V upstairs. And so this is going to work out to be V times U left UCR plus the Hermitian conjugate. And we can also just define a Yukawa coupling up the up-type Yukawa coupling so that we'll define the mass of the up quark to be y up times v over the square root of 2. So this operator, when we put it into the Lagrangian, we're going to want to define its coefficient to be y up. So in Lagrangian, the interaction between the Higgs and the up is just going to be y up, which is just some number, times epsilon ij h I qj times ucr. Okay. In the two-component language, and so that when you expand about the minimum, you get this structure for just this part of it, and then you multiply by the up quark mass. And the up quark mass, empirically, is about 2.3 MeV. So the up and the down, they're both first-generation quarks, and they have comparable mass. And that's true for just about all the objects that live in every generation. So the second generation is going to be a little heavier than the first generation, but their masses are going to be on the order of about 100 times that mass, 100 to 1,000 times. And then the third generation is going to be even heavier. But the third generation is a little special, and we'll see why. But I mean, maybe this is a good place to pause in between lectures. So maybe just take some questions and then have a little break before we move on. Okay, well, then just the last thing I want to say to foreshadow what we'll talk about in just a little bit is that this is only the story for one generation of up and down. And so I've deliberately left off the interactions between the W and the quarks. So we've considered how the W's and the Z act on leptons. That's up on the top board. And we've considered how the Z and W act on one generation of quarks. For the lepton case, we were able to diagonalize all of our interactions with the Higgs. In other words, we were able to diagonalize the mass matrix, and that left no traces anywhere else. We perform a diagonalization, and it gives us a diagonal mass term, so we can really just think of the Yukawa couplings as a single object. They're diagonal entries in a 3x3 matrix in flavor space. And then the objects that got us into diagonal form disappear from the theory because they always act on their inverses in every other part of the Lagrangian. And that's not going to be true for the quark sector. And I'll only say a little bit about this in the second lecture, just to write down the Feynman rules. But there's going to be a tutorial about this, so I'm not going to spill all the beans. And so I guess we can reconvene in about 15 minutes. Okay.